Hey, it's Dan here. If you haven't heard, the Fun Kids Science Weekly is back and bigger than ever. We hear all about the biggest stories in the world of science.
And so they realize, oh my gosh, I think what we're seeing is a newborn great white.
Find out which science is the best.
Wow, I thought that just sounded like such a cool career that I could get out there, visit different places in those different environments.
Put your questions to the experts.
How does a mobile phone contact another mobile phone without a wire?
Remember to send in your questions on the free Fun Kids app or at funkidslive.com. That's the bigger and better Fun Kids Science Weekly every Saturday from wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Mysteries of Science. My name's Stevie and I'm the Deputy Editor of Science and Nature, the monthly magazine from the team behind The Week Junior.
And I'm Michael, the Features Editor. On this show, we explore the strange phenomena and bizarre events that have left scientists scratching their heads.
We've got our waterproofs on this week as we're looking at one of the world's most powerful and mysterious forces, weather.
Yes, for hundreds of years, humans and other animals have had to learn to live with the fluctuating forces of the weather, from sunny days to stormy showers.
While many weather phenomena are understood, there are some that have left meteorologists, those are scientists who study the weather, ripping up their forecasts, from clouds that look like flying saucers to lightning in the shape of a ball.
So come with us as we explore some weird weather. This is Mysteries of Science.
Blimey, that was some thunderstorm.
Whew, sure was. I'm absolutely soaked, but hey, look at that, Stevie. The sun's coming out now. Time to take the wellies off and put my shades on.
As we move into spring, the weather can be quite unpredictable, with it raining one minute and being sunny the next.
It certainly gives us plenty to talk about, because as we know, people love nothing more than talking about the weather.
Now, before science was able to tell us what was going on with the weather, people told stories about it instead.
And you know what, Stevie? Those stories continue to this day, and they tell us a lot about the awesome and mysterious power of the weather.
Hi, I'm Tamsin Mori, and I'm the author of the Weather Weaver series.
Hi, Tamsin. Welcome to the show. For those of our listeners who haven't read the Weather Weaver books, could you please tell us what they're about?
They're set up in Shetland, which is where half of my family are from. And the premise of the story is that weather is magical, and if you can befriend a cloud, you might be able to influence it.
Ooh, influencing the weather, that sounds interesting. So Tamsin, tell us, what inspired you to write this story?
The inspiration was, well, probably my granny's stories. My granny grew up on a tiny island called Fula, which is about 4 miles off the Shetland mainland. And Shetland, I'm not sure if you know, it's really far north. It's 60 degrees north. It's the most northerly bit of the UK. So they get very extreme weather there sometimes. And all of my grandmother's stories focused around the weather. She was perpetually talking about furious thunderstorms sweeping in from the sea or tricksy winds that wanted to sweep you away. So that really set the idea in me that the weather was a character. It had moods.
Weather certainly does seem to have a mind of its own, and yet, in some ancient societies, people thought they might actually be able to control it by performing certain rituals. So, Tamsin, why do you think we're so fascinated by this idea of controlling the weather?
Well, speaking for myself, when I was small, we didn't live in Shetland, but we used to go back there regularly to visit family, and it was my favourite place in the whole world. At the end of our time there, I never wanted to leave. But I discovered that if there was fog, then planes couldn't fly and we'd be stranded there. So having figured this out, I set about trying to conjure fog. And I was pretty determined about it. I wrote poems to it. I used to write spells and leave them on the beach. I'd whisper wishes to it, begging it to come. And one time, finally, it worked. The fog came in. It settled around the airport. And we got a whole extra week in Shetland. And after that, I was absolutely convinced that I could control the weather.
Sounds like Tamsin has the gift. I mean, I remember once wishing for more snow to come so I could get a snow day from school, but it didn't work.
Oh, never mind, Michael. I guess controlling the weather isn't for everyone.
What would you do if you could control the weather, though, Stevie? What would be your ideal weather conditions?
Well, for me, it kind of depends on the time of day. During the day, I quite like a sunny, not too hot, but walking around kind of in a nice sunshine. but at night I love a thunderstorm. There's something about falling asleep to the rain and the crashing of the lightning. It's brilliant.
Interesting. And how about you, Tamsin? What's your favourite and least favourite type of weather?
Oh, I would say my favourite type of weather has to be sunny but quite brisk, sort of spring sunshine. So it's not sweltering, it's just bright and full of promise. And I think my worst kind of weather has to be that really fine rain that you don't really feel like you're being rained on, but you end up completely drenched having been outside for 5 minutes.
I'm with you there, Tamsin. So we know about the power of the weather in stories and how much we wish to control it, but what about the science? Let's dig into some weird weather phenomena and the forces behind them.
My name's Kirsty McCabe. I'm the editor of Met Matters, which is the Royal Meteorological website that covers weather and climate phenomena. And so we do lots of little explainers on there. So everything from why is the sky blue, how are rainbows formed, to more topical weather events that are making the headlines.
Welcome to the show, Kirsty, and thank you for joining us. Some of you may also recognise Kirsty's voice from her weather forecasts on Sky News.
So what weird weather do we want Kirsty to try and explain for us, Michael?
Well, Stevie, I've always been fascinated by UFO clouds.
Ooh, UFO clouds. What are they?
So I don't know if UFO clouds are their actual scientific name, but I like to call them that because, well, they're clouds that look like UFOs. Unless, of course, they're not clouds at all and just have alien ships hiding underneath them.
Okay, Kirsty, you're going to have to help us get to the bottom of this. Are clouds actually UFOs, or are UFOs actually clouds?
Lenticular clouds, more specifically altocumulus lenticularis cloud, is actually my favourite because they look so mysterious in the sky. Because unlike other clouds that are moved along by the wind, the lenticular clouds actually seem to hover because the wind moves through them, and that's all to do with how they're formed. And when you've got a mountain range and very strong winds, the wind drives the air up over the mountain, and then down the other side it kind of moves like waves. And in every crest of the wave, when the air is rising, it cools and condenses and forms a cloud. And so you end up with these little layers of cloud, and they almost look like lots of plates or lenses stacked up. And that's where the lenticular bit of the name comes from, because that's describing it as being a lens-shaped cloud. Because all the fancy, posh-sounding cloud names are actually, if you break it down, give you a clue as to what the clouds look like. So I like altocumulus lenticularis, and the alto bit tells me it's a middle-level cloud. All the different cloud names have little secrets. So nimbus, if you hear a nimbus stratus cloud or a cumulonimbus cloud, that means rain-bearing. Nimbus means rain-bearing. When we talk about stratus, that means it's a layered cloud. Cumulus means it's a puffy cloud. So all the cloud names give you a clue as to what height in the atmosphere you'll find it and what sort of shape it's going to have. So the lenticularis clouds look like stacks of pancakes almost, and they seem to hover in the sky. And a lot of people think they might be spaceships, UFOs. And actually, a lot of them are seen over a place called Area 51, which is in America, and it's to the east of the Rockies. And a lot of people think that's where they've seen aliens. But you've got the Rocky Mountains there and the strong winds coming over them. Possibly they're just seeing my favourite cloud, the lenticularis cloud.
Wow. Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there, but I think my main takeaway is that by exploring the weather, we might just have solved another mystery of science, which is the UFO sightings over Area 51.
Amazing, and maybe something we'll have to unpack in another episode. I also liked finding out about what different cloud names mean, like how the word nimbus means rain-bearing cloud.
Yeah, and how cumulus means that it was a puffy cloud. So that's some secrets of the sky that we've uncovered there, but what about a weather phenomena that occurs closer to the ground?
Oh, tell me more.
Well, imagine if you went outside during or even after a thunderstorm and found a glowing sphere close to the ground around the size of a human head, and then in a flash, it was gone.
Sounds kind of spooky. Is that even possible?
It sure is, and believe it or not, it's a very rare, very mysterious type of lightning that has been reported by people for centuries. It's known as ball lightning.
So it's actually very poorly understood. And so it's a very, very rare form of lightning. And it's been described as sort of floating, fist-sized, glowing sort of spheres. And they usually occur close to the ground in association with a kind of lightning called cloud to ground. Now, there's three types of lightning, really, the main ones. You can get lightning flashes within a cloud. You can get ones that go from one cloud to another, and you get ones that go from the cloud to the ground. And actually, the cloud to the ground ones, maybe only 20% of lightning strikes are those. Most of them happen up within the clouds or between the clouds because it's easier, it's quicker for the lightning, the electrical discharge to get from one to the other. But sometimes you can get them going all the way to the ground, and very rarely you can get an effect that we think is causes ball lightning, and that's when there's maybe a lot of silica in the ground, and so you think it could be the lightning striking soil that's very rich in silica could release some minerals, and that may cause this sphere-like shape to appear. But it's one of those ones that's still quite weird and poorly understood.
So there's still some weather phenomena out there that we don't fully understand.
Yes, and speaking of lightning, there's another rare type which was once dismissed as fiction because they sounded so strange and were so hard to film or photograph. They share their name with a mythical fairy-like creature.
Yes, sprites are much, much higher. And whereas ball lightning might last for a few seconds or even a minute, the sprites, they are hundreds of a second, so milliseconds, and they've gone. And they're something that pilots describe first because they're seen the opposite side of the thunderstorm. On top of it, as much as 50, I think, to 90 kilometres high in the atmosphere. So up, way up in the mesosphere is where you see these elusive sprites. And they look almost like jellyfish or carrots actually dancing in the sky. They're kind of dangling down. So they're reddish-orange in colour, but they last for such a short time. The only way you'll really see them is if people take photographs and obviously have the shutter open for a long time. And you can capture them sort of dancing way up high, far, far above a thunderstorm. But they are quite big in terms of they could be like 30 miles high, and they usually form clusters. But I think the chances of seeing either ball lightning or sprites is quite low unless you're very, very lucky.
Like jellyfish or carrots dancing in the sky. I'd love to see some pictures of them.
Me too. And speaking of pictures, the Royal Meteorological Society is once again running its Weather Photographer of the Year competition, which includes a youth category. So if any of you are budding weather photographers, this is your chance to capture some weird weather on camera. Submissions are open until the 27th of June. To find out more, just head to tinyurl.com/SN-RMETS.
Kirsty, why don't you give our listeners some tips and tricks for photographing the weather?
Well, one of my favourite things, which I think always makes a beautiful picture, is a rainbow. And so the good thing to know would be to look at your weather forecast to see if there's a chance you might see one. Great conditions for that would be if you hear the classic phrase of sunshine and showers. So if you know there's going to be sunshine and showers, you've got two of the ingredients you need for rainbows, which is the sun and water. And the great thing about rainbows is that they tend to be most visible early in the day or late at the day because you've got the lower sun angle. So if you wanted to see a rainbow, you need the sun to be behind your head and low in the sky, and you need some moisture in the air. So that's where the showers come in. So you could take a look at the forecast and think, oh, I might go rainbow spotting today to see if I can capture a rainbow, take a photo of that. So being across the weather forecast would be my top tip. A really nice time of day is the golden hour, and that's around about the hour after the sun rises and about an hour before the sun sets. And that's where everything just looks more magical, with more of a golden hue to the sky. And that's where you can capture some really beautiful pictures. You've just got that extra special light that warms it up. I would love someone to capture some nice, interesting cloud formations, because I think we can see all kinds of shapes in the clouds. So if you could capture my favourite cloud, the lenticular shaped clouds, altocumulus lenticulares, that would be great. So you maybe need to head up into the mountains. You need to go on maybe a little bit of a windy day, but not too windy. Don't want anyone blown away. See if you can capture some of those clouds. But even just day to day, just watching the clouds form and shape and change, I think you can just keep your eyes in the skies and keep an eye on the weather forecast. And every day you could capture something beautiful that's happening with our weather.
That's some great advice there for photographing the weather. But what if you wanted to write about it instead? I bet Tamsin would have some good advice for us there.
Well, when I was writing about it, I really tried hard to get out in every kind of weather and notice every single sense. So the only one I didn't mess with was thunderstorms, because I'm still a bit scared of those. But otherwise, whenever there was a new weather, I was like, yay, straight out of the door with my notebook. And just noticing all the sounds and the sensation on your skin and how fast you got wet and whether it was warm or cold, and what you felt like doing in that kind of weather. I mean, I'm fairly hardy, and I generally think as long as you've got the right clothes, it's all right to go out in any old kind of weather. But yeah, it's just noticing every single sense. So rather than just saying, it's raining, what kind of rain is it? How hard is it? What's the ground doing? What's it sound like? I think one of my favourite ones was hailstones, because they're like percussion. They sound like a drum roll. Although I have discovered that if they're larger than about half a centimetre big, they hurt. So, but the other thing I would say is get yourself a special notepad or duck back inside before trying to make notes, because the first few times I went out in fairly dire weather, I came back and my notebook was all wrinkled, completely soggy. So I then had to try and write it all down from memory. I've now got a notebook that's made out of stone dust, would you believe, which makes it completely waterproof.
A waterproof notebook? I need to get myself one of those.
Me too. Not because of the weather, though. I'm just always spilling water on my notebook.
Now, I think there's only one way to finish that, and that's with, yes, you guessed it, the mysteriometer. Kirsty, on a scale of 0 to 100, 0 being we know nothing and 100 being we know everything, how much do we know about the weather?
Oh, I think we're always learning. And I think sometimes we'll find out that what we thought we knew maybe wasn't quite right. That, and that's the whole point of being a scientist, is that you're not done yet. You've got to always be comparing what you found out with what's happening next. And I mean, weather forecasting is a great example of that, because we get all the data, all the observations around the world, put it into the forecast model. It comes out with a forecast. And we don't just go, right, that's what's going to happen. We spend the whole time then checking what's happening for real with what the model thought was going to happen, and then refining the model, improving it, always making things better, always trying to change it. So I think we're, as much as we try and understand things, something always surprises us. And we mentioned ball lightning and sprites, things like that are quite elusive and hard to see. And I think there'll be more things that will surprise us. The more technology improves, the more we hopefully will be able to capture these things on camera and in photographs and video. But I think in terms of an actual number of how much we understand, we're probably a good 70-75%. I reckon there's more we can know and more we can understand, because everything, there's so much out there to see and to get a handle on. So I think we've got a really good grounding, a really good understanding, but there's always room for improvement.
I like that. There is always room for improvement. Maybe one of our listeners will make the next great weather discovery.
Yes, we'd love to hear from you. What's the weirdest weather that you've ever seen? To leave us a voice message, head over to funkidslive.com/mysteries and hit the big red button. Your message could be played on a future episode.
You might even hear it in our very next episode, which is all about your mysteries. We'll be putting your most burning, mind-boggling questions to the experts to get the answers you're looking for. If you've got a question, then you know what to do. Head to funkidslive.com/mysteries. Until then, stay curious.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, which is made by the same people that make The Week Junior magazine. You can get 6 free issues of The Week Junior or 3 issues of The Week Junior Science and Nature for £5 by heading to theweekjunior.co.uk/podcast offer.
Hey, it's Dan here. If you haven't heard, the Fun Kids Science Weekly is back. And bigger than ever. We hear all about the biggest stories in the world of science.
And so they realize, oh my gosh, I think what we're seeing is a newborn great white.
Find out which science is the best.
Wow, I thought that just sounded like such a cool career, that I could get out there, visit different places in those different environments.
Put your questions to the experts.
How does a mobile phone contact another mobile phone without a wire?
Remember to send in your questions on the free Fun Kids app or at funkidslive.com. That's the bigger and better Fun Kids Science Weekly every Saturday from wherever you get your podcasts.